Okay, let's get started.
Wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioTU.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioTU.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 28 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from AudioTU.com, and with me on the line, as per usual, via Skype from Melbourne, Shelton Muller. How are you?
Good morning, Bruce. I'm well. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
That's good.
What's new in your world?
Oh, I'm just still putting the final touches to our magazine. It's a long, drawn-out process sometimes. And apart from that, just working, eating, sleeping, living. The same.
The same as usual.
The usual, yeah. Getting used to all the new features on my D200.
Yeah.
As if anybody's been looking at the internet on reviews for the D200, there's only one thing everybody has to say about it.
What's that?
And that, it's fabulous.
Right.
I think on the Ken Rockwell site, he basically calls it the best digital SLR he's ever owned. And,
wow.
He's owned a few, but it is a fabulous camera. If you're thinking about buying one, anybody out there listening, just go and do it.
And you're in the top end of the market.
Well, it's in Australia, it's about $2,700 for the body, so it's not cheap, but it's
certainly not the most expensive out there.
Oh, no, but it's a fabulous, fabulous camera, and its usability, if that's a word, mm-hmm. is just, it fits in your hand and works the way it should, and the quality straight out of the camera is fabulous. I've been a D100 user for years, and as much as I love the D100, it's... Well, I don't mean to be insulting, but it's chalk and cheese by comparison.
Wow.
Yeah, in terms of using the camera and in terms of the image that comes straight out of the camera, oh, absolutely. So if you are thinking of upgrading from your D100 or indeed just thinking of going out and buying a digital SLR, buy this one because it's fabulous. Mm.
How do you find the tonal range?
Well, that's one of the great things about it. The D100, I battled with the dynamic range of the sensor. It didn't seem to be able to hold too much in the highlights.
Right.
And metering seemed to always be a problem in that respect. Maybe it was just me, but I doubt it. I'm not the only one who's complained about it. But the D200 has a broader dynamic range, fabulous color. It's sharp. And the metering on it is spot on. And of course, you've got to, as we've discussed before, the three different metering modes, your center weighted metering, matrix metering, and your spot metering.
Yep.
So if you know how to use those and the camera is accurate as it is, then you're home and hose. It really is. I'm astounded by how much I'm loving using it. I wish I had more photography to do at the moment, but I seem to be doing more writing and meetings than I am photography. But I just love using it. I really, really do. Just getting back also to a camera we've talked about before. My wife last year won the Lonely Planet photo competition, travel photo competition that was held here in this country. And she won a trip to New Zealand to hike through the Alps of New Zealand. And I was supposed to go with her, but deadlines prevented me, unfortunately. So my little sister went instead. And lucky kid. And Kerry has returned. My wife has returned. And it's some of the most incredible places I've ever seen in the world. She is taking pictures of. Now, because she was hiking and she had a backpack on and, was hiking up in some very high altitudes, she took a Fuji S9500 with her. She normally carry her D70 Nikon, but she wanted to go lightweight and still have quality, and of course the 28-300 equivalent zoom that this camera has is fabulous.
Right.
Now what I'm going to do, Bruce, if my wife lets me, and I'm sure she will, she won't mind, is send you a couple of images that she took with the Fuji S9500, and this camera is fabulous.
Ooh.
For an all-in-one, prosumer style digital camera.
Yeah.
It just took some incredible photographs. I mean, my wife's good. She knows how to compose a picture, but the camera also just handled this situation really, really well.
Wow.
The fact that she had it all in one, and it was a relatively small and yet powerful camera, made it perfect for her to use in those circumstances. So there's another one that I will highly recommend, and I'll send you some images from it.
Great. Okay. Well, keep an eye out on the website, and there'll be a link up for those photos from Kerry.
Absolutely.
All right.
And I'm sure she won't mind. And here's a subject we're going to talk about today. Something Kerry didn't take with her, and I don't blame her, is a tripod. Now, we haven't really talked about tripods on this podcast before.
Not in depth, no.
No, touched on it, but we haven't really talked about them at length. And I want to just talk about using a tripod for the moment and why. I think every photographer who's keen to practice his craft, whether it be an amateur, enthusiast, or of course a professional, needs a tripod. And often it can be a very confusing purchase because there are so many things to toss up. For instance, why do you need a tripod in the first place when these days you can hand hold and take your pictures and there shouldn't be too much of a problem, especially with cameras becoming more lightweight. And as we've just said, the Fuji S9500's got a 28-300 zoom in it, and it's small, so you shouldn't really need a tripod. But there are many reasons why you have a tripod. First of all, is the logistical reason. Perhaps you need the tripod because the shutter speeds you're working at are too slow. Now, a rule of thumb for shutter speeds is never to have your shutter speed lower than the equivalent focal length of your lens. So if the equivalent focal length of your lens is, say, 60 mil, then you wouldn't want to go below a 60th of a second. That's a general rule, and we've talked about it before. I can handhold pretty well at a 15th or a 30th myself, but a lot of people can't. So a tripod's logical use is for situations such as that, when you have a slow shutter speed. Now, you may think, well, all I have to do is open up the aperture. But of course, the toss-up there is, if we're doing a landscape photograph particularly, you don't want to open up the aperture necessarily, because you want to employ all the depth of field that you can get. This would be especially true if you're shooting from a low perspective and you have some very powerful foreground interest that you want sharp, and you have some very powerful background interest to lead the eye through the image. You want that all sharp. If you don't have it sharp, the eye may not follow through the image as it naturally would, because it looks for things that are in focus. So a tripod is necessary, especially for the landscape photographer, again, for the logistical reason that his shutter speed will often be too slow. This is exacerbated by the fact that you may use neutral density filters or graduated filters. And of course, we should even do this even if we're shooting digitally, which will slow the shutter speed even further. So a great reason to have a tripod. The other reason that you want a tripod is because it makes you stop and think. One of the problems that I see when I'm judging, when I lecture at camera clubs and judge, and I hate judging camera or photo competitions, I really do, but they ask me to do it all the time. But one of the things that I often come across is that I see the idea, I see what this person is trying to achieve in the image, and it just hasn't worked, and that is possibly because he hasn't spent long enough seeing it, working it through. And we've talked about this before, working through what he's pre-visualized to come up with the image that that was in this foggy mass in the back of his head. Using a tripod compels you to stop and think about what you're doing. So your shutter speed may be fine, and everything may be perfectly hand-holdable, but the tripod, mounting your camera on a tripod, makes you stop and think. Now, this is especially true with still life photography and landscape photography. It's very easy for us to arrive at a scene, go, isn't that pretty, and take a picture. But very rarely does that work. If you happen to pull it off, good for you. But very rarely will you get that photo right first time just by lifting your camera to your eye and going click. The tripod makes you stop and think about your composition, your viewpoint and perspective, how high your camera is up above the ground, or how low it is to the ground, whether you need to move to the right or the left a little bit for, more interesting composition. It also makes you think about the lens you're using. It also makes you think about filters that you could use, and of course, your exposure, employing depth of field or not employing depth of field. Those kinds of things are the reasons why, if you can, you can stop and use a tripod. And in portraiture, some of the greatest portraiture you can do, of course, is taken spontaneously. But the tripod, if you're doing a portrait setting where someone's actually, in a position that you've set them up in, where the light is beautiful, you've got them nicely posed in that light, a tripod will also help you here. because one, you can use a longer lens, which you like to do with portraits because one, it removes you from your subject and it also diminishes the depth of field, reduces the depth of field, compresses the scene, and is more complementary to the face. So if you're using a longer lens, it's probably safer and wiser to have your camera sturdily mounted on a tripod. Also, it means that you can interact, walk back and forward with, interact with your subject, and the camera stays where it is. Nothing ever moves. If you're working with an assistant, you can get that assistant to use a reflector and direct, walk back and forward, keeping your camera, the composition, the subject all set up and ready to go. It also means that you can converse with the subject while you're taking the photographs, knowing that nobody's moved and the camera will be taking the same composition, the same setup each time. So if you can, I would always suggest to use a tripod. That is, of course, unless you're doing, you know, photography that requires you to be a little more spontaneous. But you'll know that, of course. That's just logical. What to look for when you're buying a tripod is important. A lot of people get confused with their tripod purchases. One of the first things that I've seen customers often go for, consumers go for when they're buying a tripod, is they want it to be lightweight. And that in a way is good, but if it's the wrong kind of lightweight, in other words, if it's a junky kind of lightweight, it's just going to be a complete waste of time and money. When I was leading my photo tour in China last year, a few of the travelers brought along small lightweight tripods that, to be honest with you, just didn't work. They were more frustration to use because they wobbled and they shook and the cameras were just too heavy for them. They brought them along because they were small and lightweight and they could travel with them, but they were a complete and utter waste of time. I took along a Manfrotto 055. I believe in America they're called Bogan tripods. A Bogan in Australia is something completely different. It's usually someone with a mullet haircut and a pair of moccasins on their feet, but that's another story. But they're called Manfrotto here. In America they're called Bogan tripods. I had the 055, which is a fairly heavy tripod, but at least when I pulled it out to use it, it was heavy enough to do the job, because I had a heavy SLR and sometimes I was using long lenses. Now that's the toss-up that you have to decide upon. You can buy lightweight tripods that are very sturdy, but they're also very expensive because they're made of carbon fiber and other very expensive materials. And, you know, if you've got that kind of money, fabulous. But I would always suggest that if you can't afford a lightweight but sturdy tripod, opt for the sturdy and heavy, unfortunately. Otherwise, really, it defeats itself. The whole purpose of buying a tripod is self-defeated if the tripod you've got wobbles and shakes with the slightest gust of wind or the first little bit of weight that you put upon it. There are many kinds of tripods available. Some look really sophisticated and shiny and very good, but actually they can be very cheap and plastic. So I would always suggest that you buy a metal leg tripod, and again, the Manfrotto, the slick tripods, and that are very, very good usually, especially in Australian terms, the $200-$400 mark. You want a tripod that comes up at least to your chest, and that's without, of course, the camera on it, and of course without winding up the column. You can wind the column as the center column in the tripod. You can wind that up, of course, and bring it up even higher. But the problem with that is you start to destabilize the center of gravity, and your camera, you know, is elevated above the three legs, and you can get a lot of camera shake simply by having, you know, the center column extended too high. So I would suggest that at least when you've got your legs extended, the tripod at least comes up to your chest. And then if you do need to raise your tripod up a little higher, you can. The other way, I would suggest that you make sure that your tripod can get down as low as possible. Sometimes you're doing a landscape photograph or a macro insect photograph or something that requires you to get down really, really low. And a lot of tripods with a click of the leg can actually spread out so that the leg is, you know, almost horizontal.
That's what I love about the Manfrotto.
Yes, absolutely. And the Manfrottos are very good that way. You put all your legs in, you get just the one segment, and then you spread the legs out, and you can get down really, really low. that is excellent for you know, powerful landscapes where you've got a low perspective, and of course insect photography, and even, you know, children's portraiture, because you don't want to shoot children from a high and demeaning angle.
It also means you can set up on particularly uneven ground if you have to.
Yes.
You know, yes, you might have a rock that's right in the place of where you want your the third leg of your tripod, and you can just, you know, flick it out at an odd angle and sit it on top of the rock.
Yep, that's a very good point that you add, and that will often be the case if you're, you know, especially if you're a landscape photographer.
Yeah.
So consider those. Have a look at what the legs do and how far, you know. Make sure that the legs are also easy to extend and easy to put back in. You don't want to be mucking with the clips and the, you know, and working too hard. They should be very one movement in, out, legs and extensions, because that can just drive you nuts if you're having to muck with something that's badly designed. Again, the Manfrotto tripods, one click, you know, each extension, bang, in they go. I have, in fact, three Manfrotto tripods, and my biggest one is my 058, which actually has a mechanism that you turn at the top of the tripod, which releases all three legs simultaneously and allows you to put all three legs back in one movement simultaneously. Wow. It's a heavy thing, but I use it for, you know, commercial shoots, and it's just fabulous. Now, the other thing about a tripod when you're purchasing it is that the head itself. That's where the camera connects. And I always suggest, if you can, to get something that's, you know, maybe a good close to the tripod ball head. Because again, here with one movement, you can move your camera to whatever angle, up, down, sideways, round and round, with a ball head. And if you can't, sometimes the tripods come with these 3D style heads with handles that you move. They can be rather cumbersome and slow. If you can buy a tripod with a ball head, you're going to be better off. I use the Manfrotto 322 head, which is like a joystick, and it's a really handy head to have. One movement and away you go. That is really useful. A lot of people object to using tripods because they're slow and difficult and cumbersome. That's why you've got to buy these kinds of tripods and their accessories, so that the normally cumbersome nature of a tripod is diminished by, you know, just clever use of the accessories and the heads that they have. I also suggest that the head that you buy has a quick link or a quick release head, a quick release clip, I mean, that actually screws to the bottom of your camera and stays there, and then is clipped very quickly onto the head, rather than screwing the camera off and on every time you you put it on the tripod. That way, your camera goes one click, it's on, it's connected to the tripod, one click, off. And you've got this clip that screws and stays permanently to the bottom of your camera, so that you never have to, your camera can be very quickly off and on. Now, this is a very handy thing, especially if you're photographing something that you think requires a tripod, and all of a sudden you've got to be spontaneous. You've got to get that camera off the tripod, and this would be the case, of course, with photographing people or events, and you've got to be, you know, out and mobile very, very quickly. So make sure that the head that you've got on the tripod has a quick release plate that you can keep to the bottom of your camera. So there's just a few ideas, but again, I'm just reminding everyone that they should have a good quality tripod. It should be good chest height, it should be well made, it should be relatively heavy, it should be, yes, a little bit hard to carry maybe, or at least very sturdy if you can afford the carbon fiber ones, and it should be easy for you to use, and that will vary from person to person as to what they call easy for you to use, but those are really the criteria I look for. And if you use your tripod often, you'll find your photography improving, especially in terms of landscape photography and even portraiture from at times. But if you love your landscape, don't shoot without a tripod. Please set it up and take your time and work it through, and you'll find that your photography will improve because you've taken the time to work through what you've seen in your head and make sure that it happens in your image.
Fantastic. Thank you, Shelton.
My pleasure, Bruce. I appreciate everybody's time again. And listen, I'm looking for more people's questions so that I've got subjects to talk about each week. Now, if you've got something you need to know, please let us know here at audio2u.com, because sometimes I struggle to find a good subject everybody's going to be interested in. I don't know what you're thinking. I don't know what you want to know. Yeah. So let me know and I'll be there for you.
Yep. Send us an email, studio@audio2u.com.
That'd be great. I'm looking forward to hearing what everybody wants to know.
And one thing that I'd just like to cross-promote, this week in sign language, I'm going to be doing a shootout between two different sets of earbud monitors for listening on your iPods or your portable devices. So if you're in the market for some great in-ear headphone earbud type thingies, check out this week's episode of Sign Language.
Okay.
Alrighty. We'll talk with you next week then, Sheldon.
Looking forward to it, Bruce. Thank you, mate. And thank you, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audiotoyou.com. Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
audiotoyou.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
Control D to bookmark
audiotoyou.com.